Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to Iris and to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, May 15th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's look at today's weather forecast coming from KCRG. Clouds will try to hang on as long as they can today, but some folks will catch some breaks through the day. An isolated shower or two is possible underneath those clouds, though they will be pretty light and fairly quick to move on if you experience one. Clouds are a bit thinner in the northern half of the area and thickest in the south. The amount of sunshine today will really determine your temperatures, with highs close to 70 in our northern zones and closer to the mid-60s in the south. Expect more sunshine all across eastern Iowa on Tuesday as an area of high pressure moves into the region. The influence of this will keep things quiet and mostly clear for a couple of days. With the aid of the sun, expect highs in the upper 70s on Tuesday. A backdoor cold front coming from the Great Lakes region Tuesday night could keep our highs down in the low to mid-70s on Wednesday. A storm system moves through the central U.S. on Thursday, dragging a cold front through. Along with it, a pretty good shot at some rain and embedded thunderstorms will be found. This front also drags in some slightly cooler air as we head into the weekend. Turning to the front page now, let's look at the articles we have there. Cedar Falls Church Buildings Owner Eyes Possibilities, Waterloo Prodigy, Prince Protege Comes Home. And let's begin reading the top line story, Under the Moon is Over. Popular movie series begins its final season June 2nd in Cedar Falls. This story by Melody Parker begins with a photograph of families on the lawn in lawn chairs in front of the screen watching a movie. The caption says, "Families gather in Cedar Falls Overman Park in 2022 for Movies Under the Moon. This year, the event's final season." Dateline Cedar Falls. This is the final summer for Movies Under the Moon. On June 2nd, the big screen will be up in Overman Park for the season-opening movie Lyle, Lyle, Crocodile, about a singing crocodile. But the family-friendly event is going away after the final film, The Sandlot, a story about friendship and baseball, which will be shown on August 18th. Quote, "This is the 20th and final year for Movies Under the Moon," said Kim Baer, executive director of Cedar Falls Community Main Street. Quote, "There are a lot of factors that went into the decision, some of which we aren't at liberty to share. With that being said, we have cherished all the memories created through 20 years of Movies Under the Moon and are so grateful to all the support from Cedar Valley and our sponsors," unquote. For many years, the outdoor movie event has been a summer staple, particularly for families, because it is free and a fun environment for kids. Attendance has dropped in recent years as more family-oriented activities and events are available Friday nights throughout the summer, Baer said. Quote, "It's just outlived its lifespan. It's time for us to focus on different activities for our organization and community," unquote. Costs have also increased, including renting the projection system. This summer's series also will feature Princess Bride on June 16th, a fairy tale parody, The Secret Life of Pets on July 28th, and Spider-Man No Way Home on August 11th. Next, we have Waterloo Prodigy, Prince Protege Comes Home. Minneapolis musician performs Saturday at the Electric Park Ballroom. This story written by Pat Kinney, Dateline Minneapolis. Sometimes life's journey isn't clear-cut, black and white. It has different hues. That's certainly true for Waterloo-raised Julius Collins. His life and music career has been graced with shades of purple, as in The Purple One, Prince Rogers Nelson, more properly known as Prince. The late legendary pop singer-songwriter was as supportive as a pastor and as tough as a football coach to Collins during an association spanning 25 years. Collins honed his skills and has become an established performer in the Twin Cities, his mentor Prince's home turf. And now, Collins's career and life come full circle. He's returning to Waterloo for a performance Saturday. He'll be at the historic Electric Park Ballroom on the National Cattle Congress grounds for his high school class reunion. His classmates in the East High class of 1983 think so much of Collins, they are opening the event up to the general public. Though his renown with Prince-mentored bands has spread to Europe, he admits to a little nervousness about playing a gig in his hometown. But he'll put his all into it, just as he learned as a young boy in the church choir. Collins was born in Chicago and moved to Waterloo just before turning 2, when he was placed in a foster home with Fannie Mae Dolly Page. Quote, "I am inclined to think that really did go a long way to shape who I am, for better or for worse," he said. "She was quite the East Side matriarch. She was really a remarkable woman. Dolly, she was an iron hand. She meant business and didn't suffer fools," unquote. It meant going to church 3 times a week at Mount Carmel Missionary Baptist Church. It opened his world to music. "That church is where I really learned about how to sing with meaning," Collins said. Quote, "That church has so many great singers, legitimately fantastic singers, interesting instruments. I just remember as a kid just feeling so lucky I got to hear them. It was really educational for me." He also joined choir at school. Quote, "Choir at church was a very different animal than choir at school," he said. He gained perspective between the structured harmonies at school choir and music he heard at church. But music, wherever and whenever he performed, lifted him up. Quote, "As a kid, I was invisible. I felt lonely. I was the sad little dude," he said. "At church, I felt like I was in a situation where I was being held, where people saw me and cared about me. They called me Little Brother Juju. That was my nickname growing up, and it meant something to me," unquote. He attended Grant Bridgeway Elementary School and had his first band in 5th grade, J.C. and the Bridgeway Band. He joined a Christian rock band at age 16, Arrival, and began touring a bit. Quote, "That's when I realized that was something I really would love to do," he said. He was also involved in high school choir and show choir. Quote, "That was my introduction, peripherally, to theater and performance movement with music." After he graduated from East High, he was united on a more regular basis with his birth mother. Home life was good, but he was looking for purpose and enrolled at Hawkeye Institute of Technology, now Hawkeye Community College. A teacher there made him aware of a school in Atlanta, Music Business Institute. Quote, "I ended up going, and it was really good for me," he said. "I got out of Waterloo. I have some bittersweet emotions about Waterloo. I took what I loved about Waterloo with me, and I kind of left Waterloo behind. And I don't mean that derogatorily. There was some unbelievable sadness there for me. If it weren't for music and being a wrestler at East under Coach Steve Knipp, music and sports really saved my life. It gave my life purpose," unquote. Next, we have Cedar Falls Church Building's owner eyes possibilities. About a half dozen inquiries received. Andy Malone wrote this story. Dateline Cedar Falls. It is not uncommon for churches to close down and be repurposed for different uses. That may be what happens to the former First Church of Christ Scientist building at 701 West 6th Street. Bar M, LLC, purchased the building for $155,000 in February. Company spokesperson Julie Morris said she would prefer to see it become a holistic space, offering mind, body, and spirit services to promote health and wellness. About a half dozen inquiries have been received for the property at the corner of Walnut and 6th Streets. She said the owners have heard a variety of proposals, ranging from a preschool to a home, as well as an office, storage space, or place of worship. Quote, "We're not in a hurry to lease," Morris said. "We want to see what's out there, but we feel preventive health care fits well within the mission of a former church," unquote. This possibility of the company starting its own venture there is being kept on the table. Morris said those involved with the corporation have taken on other projects and explained how the old church felt like another opportunity to make a good investment. Quote, "I'm not impressed often, but holy moly, they took care of that space," she noted. "They were good stewards of the building. The space of a few thousand square feet was built in 1966 and includes pews, reading rooms, and storage between the main floor and basement. It is the third such worship center to see a change in ownership in that area of Cedar Falls after the former Faith Wesleyan and Jordan Crossing Church at 209 Walnut Street was purchased. Plans were developed to locate Dolled Up Studios, an eyebrow and makeup salon, in the building. Another church, the former Cedar Falls Mennonite Church at 215 West 9th Street, was torn down to make way for a new residential pocket neighborhood. Quote, "We feel it was given to us almost as a gift to take care of it, especially because the neighborhood is really neighborly," Morris said. Now let's turn the page to the regular Monday feature of the Courier, Northeast Iowa Area Escapades. Here are just a few of the events and goings-on worth checking out this week in the Northeast Iowa area. Starting off on Monday 15th, open house at Cedar Falls City Hall. Today's open house from 4 to 6 p.m. will feature guided tours of the newly renovated Cedar Falls City Hall, 220 Clay Street. City staff will be available to answer questions from community members. Improvements include a renovated lower level, expansion of public areas, such as the foyer and conference room, now located outside the updated council chambers, and enhanced accessibility. On Thursday, May 18th, flowers theme for toddler time. Toddlers will be busy having the run of the place at toddler time from 11 a.m. to noon Thursday at the Blue Dorn Science Imaginarium, 322 Washington Street in Waterloo. May's theme is flowers and will feature a themed story time and toddler-friendly activity with Imaginarium staff. Toddler time is free for toddlers, $6 for adults and guardians. For more details, visit gmdistrict.org or call area code 319-234-6357. On Friday, May 19th, Avery Grauz Band at River Loop. The Avery Grauz Band, one of the Iowa's hottest bands, will perform Friday at the season's first River Loop Rhythms concert. Enjoy free live music from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. Friday at the River Loop Amphitheater, 225 Commercial Street in downtown Waterloo. Food and beverages will be available for purchase. Avery Grauz Band released their Nashville-recorded sophomore album, quote, Telltale Heart, in 2021. Debuting at number 7 on the Billboard Blues Album Chart. Their first LP, The Devil May Care, yielded a top 10 hit on the Billboard Blues Album Chart. Also on Friday, May 19th, Explore Outdoors event set. The Boys and Girls Clubs of the Cedar Valley will host their second annual Exploring the Great Outdoors event from 5:30 to 10:30 p.m. on Friday. The event takes place at Bienvenue Event Center, 7400 Hudson Road in Cedar Falls. Tickets are $40, available at www.cedarvalleyclubs.org/community-events or by contacting Rebecca at cedarvalleyclubs.org. Hurling hatchets, dueling mascots, live and silent auction, a buffet dinner, and prizes are planned. A new camper and new truck will be given away. Dry Run Creek will perform. Backing up to Tuesday on May 16th, Panther Caravan stops in Waterloo. Hear from University of Northern Iowa coaches and special guests during Tuesday's Panther Caravan visit to Single Speed Brewing Company, 325 Commercial Street, Waterloo. The event is from 6 to 7:30 p.m. and will include a program at 6:45 p.m. Food will be available. Activities are planned for kids. Registration is free at www.adv.uni.edu. And on Saturday, May 20th, leash up for Furry 5K. The 14th annual Furry 5K Run Walk fundraiser for the Cedar Bend Humane Society is from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday. The action begins at Big Woods Recreation Park South Shelter at 1228 Big Woods Road in Cedar Falls. Individuals with dogs are encouraged to bring their canine companions along for the event or register to run alongside dogs at the race. Registration is $45. Participants will make two trips around the scenic Big Woods Lake, joined by their furry friends. There will be sponsor booths, hosting activities, contests, and giveaways. Online registration is available at cbhsfurry5k.eventbrite.com or from noon to 6 p.m. daily at the Cedar Bend Humane Society Adoption Center at 1166 West Airline Highway. Now turning the page again, we have the digest column under the Nation and World page. Dateline Gaza City, Gaza Strip. A fragile ceasefire between Israeli forces and militants in the Gaza Strip appeared to be holding on Sunday after a five-day clash that killed 33 Palestinians and two people in Israel. In an early test for the truce, Palestinian militants fired a rocket that landed in an open area of southern Israel Sunday evening. Palestinian media said the launch was caused by a technical error as militants were trying to deactivate the rocket. Israel responded with tank fire on what it said were two military posts belonging to Gaza's ruling Hamas militant group. Hamas stayed out of the recent round of fighting, but Israel says it holds the group responsible for fire coming out of the territory. Next, graduation party shooting injures four. In Manchester, New Hampshire, police in New Hampshire are investigating a shooting at a graduation party that wounded four people, police said. The victims who were injured in the shooting in Manchester reported just before 5 p.m. Saturday included two women and two men, all in their 20s, who are expected to survive, police said. Manchester Police Lieutenant Matthew Barter said Saturday the investigation is ongoing. Initial reports said two males in hoods approached the gathering and at least one of them fired a weapon. The two males were seen fleeing the area. Police said the shooting did not appear to be random. And now briefly, abortion. In front of an exuberant crowd, North Carolina's Democratic governor vetoed legislation Saturday that would have banned nearly all abortions in his state after 12 weeks of pregnancy. Governor Roy Cooper affixed his veto stamp to the bill in an unconventionally public display in the Capitol, Raleigh, launching a major test for GOP leaders who recently gained veto-proof majorities in both chambers of the General Assembly. In Poland, an object believed to be an observation balloon entered Polish airspace from Belarus and flew over the country for several hours before disappearing from radar, prompting the military to carry out a search by air and on the ground on Saturday. In Turkey, Turkish politicians held final rallies in the last hours of campaigning before Sunday's pivotal presidential and parliamentary elections that could significantly shape the NATO members' future. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan faces his toughest challenge in his two decades of power. In Pakistan, a raid on militants in Pakistan's southwest in response to an earlier attack on soldiers left seven troops, six militants, and a civilian dead, the army said Saturday. Tornado. At least one person was killed when a tornado struck a community near the southern tip of Texas, damaging dozens of homes and knocking down power lines early Saturday, authorities said. At least 10 other people were hospitalized. Diplomacy. Speaking at a meeting of European and Indo-Pacific foreign ministers in Sweden, Japanese Foreign Minister Yoshimasa Hayashi expressed concern Saturday about Russian and Chinese military cooperation in Asia and said the security situation in Europe and the Indo-Pacific region was indivisible since Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. Next, Zelensky visits Paris. This story from the Associated Press. Dateline Paris. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky made a surprise visit to Paris for talks Sunday night with French President Emmanuel Macron, extending a multi-stop European tour that has elicited fresh pledges of military support as his country gears up for a counteroffensive against Russian occupation forces. France dispatched a plane to pick up Zelensky in Germany, where he met Chancellor Olaf Scholz earlier Sunday. Macron's office said the two leaders will hold talks over dinner and that Macron will reaffirm France and Europe's unwavering support to reestablish Ukraine in its legitimate rights and to defend its fundamental interests, unquote. They'll also discuss Ukraine's military and humanitarian needs and the more long-term perspectives for a return to peace in Europe, Macron's office said. France has supplied Ukraine with an array of weaponry, including air defense systems, light tanks, howitzers, and other arms and equipment and fuel. France's prime minister and foreign minister greeted Zelensky off his plane that landed in the Paris outskirts, and he was whisked into the city from there under police escort. Before flying to Paris, Zelensky discussed his country's planned counteroffensive with Scholz in Berlin. Zelensky said it will aim to liberate Russian-occupied areas within Ukraine's internationally recognized borders and not to attack Russian territory. The Washington Post cited previously undisclosed documents from a trove of U.S. intelligence leaks, suggesting that Zelensky has considered trying to capture areas in Russia proper for possible use as bargaining chips in peace negotiations to end the war launched by Moscow in February of 2022. This would put him at odds with Western governments that have insisted that weapons they provide must not be used to attack targets in Russia. Asked about the report, Zelensky said, quote, "We don't attack Russian territory. We liberate our own legitimate territory," unquote. Quote, "We have neither the time nor the strength to attack Russia," he said, according to an official interpreter. Quote, "And we also don't have weapons to spare with which we could do this," unquote. "We are preparing a counterattack for the illegally occupied areas based on our constitutionally defined legitimate borders, which are recognized internationally," Zelensky said. Among the areas still occupied by Russia are the Crimean Peninsula and parts of eastern Ukraine with mainly Russian-speaking populations. The Ukrainian president is visiting allies in search of further arms to help his country fend off Russian invasion and funds to rebuild what's been destroyed by more than a year of devastating conflict. A Luftwaffe jet flew Zelensky to the German capital from Rome, where he met Saturday with Pope Francis and Italian Premier Giorgia Meloni. It was his first visit to Berlin since the start of the war, and came a day after the German government announced a new package of military aid for Ukraine worth more than $3 billion, including tanks, anti-aircraft systems, and ammunition. Next, from the Associated Press, city remembers massacre victims. Governor Hochul Senator Schumer, are among those gathered at the memorial. Dateline Buffalo, New York. Standing in the same parking lot where he was shot in the neck a year ago in a racist attack at a Buffalo supermarket, Zaire Goodman said he was grateful to see the community come together in remembrance Sunday. His family and others affected by the mass shooting gathered with top state and local officials, first responders, and religious leaders to remember the 10 people who were killed and 3, including Goodman, who were wounded at Tops Friendly Market, which closed Sunday for the one-year anniversary of the shootings. Goodman, 21, who worked at the store and was shot while collecting carts outside, has been back to the market many times since, even visiting while it was being remodeled in the weeks after the massacre, as some questioned whether it would ever reopen. Quote, "I just wanted to show people that it's all right. We don't need to close the store indefinitely," he said. "We know the store is still important to people in this area." Mayor Byron Brown read the 13 victims' names before a moment of silence. A first responder then chimed a bell 13 times. Brown, Governor Kathy Hochul, and U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer were among those who gave speeches. Quote, "It's a beautiful day. It's Mother's Day," Hochul said. "And the cruel irony behind the fact is a day we celebrate a life that comes into this world, making someone a mother, is also a day we're here to think about those who are no longer with us. It's hard. It's been a really hard year." Earlier in the week, panelists discussed ways to combat racism and social media radicalization. After Sunday's ceremony, Goodman recalled how, after being wounded, he ran across the street in search of safety, calling his mother along the way. Quote, "Hey, you need to get here," he told her. Since then, Goodman's mother, Zanetta Everhart, and other relatives of victims have spoken before Congress about white supremacy and gun reform and organized events to add food insecurity that worsened when the market, the neighborhood's only grocery store, was inaccessible for 2 months. President Joe Biden honored the lives of those killed in Buffalo in an op-ed published Sunday in USA Today. He called on Congress and state legislative leaders to act by banning assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, requiring background checks for all gun sales, and repealing gun manufacturers' immunity from liability. His administration passed a landmark gun measure in June following a series of mass shootings. New York state law already bans possessing magazines that hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition. Gun control organizations and advocates, including Moms Demand Action and Students Demand Action, held nearly 200 events across the country over the weekend, calling on Congress to reinstate a bipartisan assault weapons ban. In Buffalo, Wayne Jones, whose mother Celestine Cheney, 65, died in the attack, urged the city and its institutions to keep on investing in the area and its residents even after the anniversary events are over. After the remembrance ceremony, adults visited tents offering information about mental health and other forms of community support. And now, listeners, at this time, we'd like to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, May 15th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, since there are no obituaries in today's courier, let's turn now to the opinion section. Our first editorial comes to us by way of the Storm Lake Times pilot, guest editorialist Hunter Vassy, who graduated from Buena Vista University last Sunday. His piece is titled Freedom and Faith. Freedom of religion is one of the most important rights guaranteed by the First Amendment. It's cited in countless Supreme Court cases and affects our lives daily. One thing that is constantly being debated, however, is just how far freedom of religion can extend. It's my opinion that freedom of religion ends at the point of infringing on other citizens' rights. There is no situation where your right to exercise your faith is more important than other citizens' right to life, liberty, and happiness. One of the most famous examples of this issue is with the legalization of gay marriage. The biggest argument against this was from Christian legislators outraged by the fact that their religious freedom was being infringed upon. Was this actually the case? If you look at the original text of the First Amendment, it states that, quote, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, unquote. This means not only is religion protected by the government, but people are also protected from religion. This prohibits things like establishing a national religion or outlawing other ones. So because citizens are protected from having a certain religious group's ideology become law, then the issue of legalizing gay marriage should be a moot point. The right to marry falls under the category of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, inalienable rights that every American citizen is supposed to possess. It's possible to protect a group of people's rights without infringing on other groups. Not only does freedom of religion get brought into discussion for legislation, but also as arguments for certain discriminations. There are several instances where a medical professional or counselor has refused treatment to LGBTQ+ individuals on the basis of religious freedom. For example, a school counselor was fired after refusing to work with LGBTQ kids and then tried suing her school for allegedly infringing on her religious freedom. Another woman claimed it was her religious right to counsel LGBTQ youth from a stance that their lifestyle was immoral. These actions could both be wildly harmful to these students, and looking at the suicide rates of LGBTQ youth, even cost a life. It should be obvious that no one's rights to practice religion are worth losing a life. If a religion claimed to need to have human sacrifice to practice, obviously no one would agree that it's covered by the First Amendment. So why do we make the exception when Christianity is under fire? Just because one religion is more prominent than another, it doesn't mean it should get special treatment. Under the First Amendment, all religion is created equal. So obviously, freedom of religion has definitely been stretched slightly past its limits in the past. It seems to be a prominent theme in Christianity that their doctrine should be spread far and wide to all people, regardless of faith. The truth is, America isn't a theocracy, and because of that, religion should play no part in lawmaking. Even if we were to impose Christian ideals on a country, what would that mean? There are so many different branches of Christianity, all with their own interpretation of the Bible and other religious texts. If we look at it literally, it would mean slavery would still be legal, wearing mixed fabrics would be outlawed, and the whole country would shut down on Sunday. This clearly isn't reasonable, which is why the First Amendment included freedom from religion as well. The only solution I see for this problem is to better respect the separation of church and state. Many legislators actively tout that they will protect Christian values while in office. Legislators' religious beliefs shouldn't even factor into their career, let alone influence their decision. As one of the most hotly debated freedoms, freedom of religion has a lot of technicalities. As a society, we need to realize that just because a religion is more prominent or the cultural norm doesn't mean everyone in our country practices it. Recognizing this, we also have to recognize that enforcing religious beliefs in our lawmaking becomes intensely problematic. We need to remember that, although the First Amendment protects religion, it also protects from religion. So the freedom of religion must end where it infringes on others' rights. Next, we have an opinion piece written by Maureen Dowd of the New York Times, titled Supremely Arrogant. Washington. The Supreme Court is still great. It's the greatest gathering of grievances we've ever seen on the High Court. The woe-is-me block of conservative male justices is obsessed with who has wronged them. It might be an opportune time to hire a supreme shrink so these resentful men can get some much-needed therapy and stop working out their issues from the bench. Neil Gorsuch is settling a score for his mother. In her memoir, Annie Gorsuch Burford wrote that when she was forced out as Ronald Reagan's Environmental Protection Agency administrator in 1983, her 15-year-old son, Neil, quote, was really upset. He told her, "You should never have resigned. You didn't do anything wrong. You only did what the president ordered. You raised me not to be a quitter. Why are you quitting?" Unquote. The scar from the trauma flared as he prepared a moot court brief with classmates at Harvard Law School and, quote, tried to add material concerning the EPA that did not fit, according to a classmate who talked to the New York Times. Burford was attacked during her tempestuous tenure as an enemy of the environment who slashed rules and spending to gut the EPA, the last straw even for Republican lawmakers and Reagan officials, was when she rejected calls to turn over documents about a toxic waste cleanup program that her agency had corrupted. She received a contempt citation from Congress. The Times wrote in an editorial back then, quote, "On becoming the head of the EPA, Anne Gorsuch inherited one of the most efficient and capable agencies of government. She has turned it into an Augean stable, reeking of cynicism, mismanagement, and decay," unquote. Last year, her son moved to complete her toxic mission. He enthusiastically joined the 6-3 vote to severely curtail the EPA's ability to regulate power plant emissions. The activists who pushed for Gorsuch to be nominated to the court are finally getting their real goal: the dismantling of their despised administrative state. On Monday, the court agreed to review its unanimous decision in Chevron versus National Resources Defense Council from 1984. As Charlie Savage wrote in the Times, quote, "If the court overturns or sharply limits the Chevron precedent, it would become easier for business owners to challenge regulations across the economy. Those include rules aimed at ensuring that air and water are clean, that food, drugs, cars, and consumer products are safe, and that financial firms do not take on too much risk," unquote. The Chevron ruling arose from a challenge to a decision by Gorsuch's mother to lower power emission standards. By overturning the ruling, he would be approving his mother's lax stance on regulations. Samuel Alito also feels maltreated. In writing the opinion that overturned Roe v. Wade, this brazenly political justice, who doesn't distinguish between his legal and religious views, mercilessly stripped women of the right to make decisions about their bodies, but somehow he whines that he is the victim. Last month, Alito told the Wall Street Journal that he did not like the way the court's legitimacy was being questioned. Quote, "We are being hammered daily, and I think quite unfairly, in a lot of instances, and nobody, practically nobody, is defending us," unquote. Funny. That's how many women feel about the Supreme Court. Clarence Thomas, who is still bitter over being outed as a porn-loving harasser of women who worked with him, even though Joe Biden did his best to sweep the corroborating evidence under the Senate rug, was slapped with more revelations of ethics derelictions this past week. ProPublica broke the news that Thomas's billionaire benefactor for luxury trips and family property, Harlan Crow, had also secretly paid the private school tuition for Thomas's grandnephew. The Washington Post revealed that Leonard Leo, an executive vice president at the Federalist Society, the cult that has transformed the courts in its own right-wing image, surreptitiously funneled tens of thousands of dollars to Thomas's wife Jeannie for consulting work a decade ago. The Post reported that Leo told the GOP pollster Kellyanne Conway to bill a nonprofit group he advises and use that money to pay Mrs. Thomas, but stipulated that the paperwork should have, quote, no mention of Jeannie, of course, unquote. Quote, the same year, the nonprofit, the Judicial Education Project, filed a brief to the Supreme Court in a landmark voting rights case, the paper said. John Roberts cannot accept that these justices are incapable of policing themselves. Despite all the slime around him, he refused to testify before Congress about a court that blatantly disdains ethics. One reason may be, as the Times reported, that the Chief Justice's own wife, Jane, has made millions of dollars as a legal recruiter, placing lawyers at firms with business before the Supreme Court. Even though I've been writing since Bush v. Gore that the court is full of hacks and the bloom is off the robes, it is still disorienting to see the murk of this Supreme Court. The next editorial comes from the Stormlake Times pilot, Paying Our Debts. And here's a quote from the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. The validity of the public debt of the United States, authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. And now to the editorial. The last time a Republican House Speaker and a Democratic President reached a deal over the debt ceiling, it resulted in cutting and freezing research into animal disease. In 2015, avian flu wiped out millions of turkeys and chickens in Buena Vista County, and still nobody fully understands it. We might, had we not starved research. This was just one maddening result of mindless governance. The Republicans tied spending cuts to lifting the debt ceiling in 2011, and Vice President Joe Biden struck a deal on behalf of the Obama administration with Speaker John Boehner that cut and froze federal budgets like the basic USDA poultry research. 12 years later, history repeats. Biden finds himself confronting House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. The House voted to tie spending cuts to increasing the debt ceiling for previous expenses incurred by Republican and Democratic legislation, knowing full well the proposal was dead on arrival in the Senate. It's a game of brinkmanship that threatens core government functions like research into African swine flu. President Biden should not make the same mistake he made with Boehner. Democrats have ideas about how to reduce spending and deficits. So do Republicans. That is supposed to happen during budget debates, not over the debt ceiling, a creation of legislation from 1917. Biden should take a literal reading of the 14th Amendment and instruct the Treasury Secretary to pay government debts no matter what Congress does. Let the literalists on the Supreme Court consider whether they want to allow the House to contravene the Constitution by tying future budgets to past debts. And let those same literalists rule on behalf of creating economic chaos by the U.S. government defaulting on its debt. Budget sequestration from the 2011 debt ceiling hostage taking helped to foster the avian flu crisis to continue to hamper production and cause real losses in Iowa. The same sort of thoughtless management led to the shutdown of a joint research effort between China and the U.S. on zoonotic disease, that which spreads from livestock to humans. Such blindness and deafness to the multiple warnings over the years helped lead to the COVID pandemic. The pandemic, of course, led to massive federal spending that piled up debt, which now must be paid. The 14th Amendment says so. The hand-wringing over deficits and debt prompted the Washington Post in a May 4th editorial to call for wholesale changes in the Farm Bill to reduce spending. Cut crop insurance subsidies. Scrap price supports. Quit paying wealthy farmers, the headline said. The Farm Bill was written during the Great Depression. Isn't it time for something better? It is. That does not mean we should gut crop insurance subsidies or scrap price supports. Something better involves a farm program revolving around conservation that rewards diversity in crops and farmers. Actually, spending on farm programs is far less than we spend sending weapons systems to Ukraine and bombs to Yemen. There is no question that crop insurance and other subsidies distort markets. That's why we should reward conservation and agricultural sustainability over production. Crop insurance subsidies should be tied to stewardship. Planting corn up to the river should not be rewarded. Planting grass should be. Allowing careful rotational grazing of CRP acres will not cost anything more and could allow more pasture for livestock production. Taking marginal land out of row crop production by putting incentives on grasslands and grazing is cheaper than subsidizing yet more corn. We can spend less by spending smarter. Merely eliminating price supports, for example, will not bring back the small yeoman landholder. It would simply cut costs at the margins. Supporting investments in smart conservation that builds resiliency into our food supply and which tends to support diversity in operations is the way forward. Thoughtful approaches to our budget priorities, unfortunately, suffer from those who frame the debate inside the Beltway. Now let's continue reading local news from the Courier. Here's the Metro Briefs column. Historical Society will meet. Dateline Waterloo. Because of scheduling conflicts, there will be a different presentation at the May 23rd Cedar Valley Historical Society meeting than previously announced. The talk will now be on the 19th century Waterloo Mayors by Tim Coleman. After Waterloo was incorporated in 1868, Romain Whitaker was elected as the first mayor. Most of the mayors elected were prominent businessmen, but not all. One election result was such a surprise that the Associated Press picked up the story and was reported throughout the country. Now retired, Coleman was an assistant librarian for the Waterloo Public Library for many years. He is the vice president of the Cedar Valley Historical Society. The meeting will be held at 7 p.m. on May 23rd in the lower-level meeting room at the Grout Museum of History and Science. All programs are open to the public. Fee for non-members is $3 and $2 for children. Individual memberships are $7 and family memberships are $12. Anyone interested in becoming a member or learning more can contact Greg Bravender at area code 319-296-3019. Next, Waterloo graduation dates are announced. Waterloo Schools announced its 2023 graduation dates for East High School, Expo Alternative Learning Center, and West High School. East High will hold its ceremony at 6 p.m. on May 23rd at the University of Northern Iowa McLeod Center. Expo will hold its ceremony at 6 p.m. on May 24th in the school's auditorium. And West High will hold its ceremony at 6 p.m. on May 25th at the UNI's McLeod Center. Next, Fairview Cemetery lot owners to meet. Waterloo. The annual meeting of the lot owners of Fairview Cemetery will be held at 2 p.m. June 8th at 242 Tower Park Drive. The purpose of the meeting is to elect trustees. Other business may be conducted by the board. Next, McFun Zone at My Waterloo Days, Waterloo. Soyfield Family McDonald's will partner with My Waterloo Days for a free kids McFun Zone on June 10th. It will be held at Anton Gardens in downtown Waterloo, and the event is free. The first 500 children ages 12 and younger will receive a free goodie bag and entry for grand prizes. Registration for the McFun Zone begins at 9 a.m. at the corner of Sycamore and East 4th Street. Free children's games will run from 10 to 11 a.m., followed by a stage show from Blank Park Zoo at 11 a.m., and a kids-only parade at noon. Children are encouraged to decorate themselves and their transportation to be considered for awards, including Most Colorful, Best Decorated, and Most Artistic. The event will close with grand prizes and the bike race awards at 12:30 p.m. Now let's turn to the sports page. Under the heading High School Track and Field, East's Norman headed to state. Dateline is Dubuque. For Waterloo East Track standout Nyla Norman, qualifying for state is as easy as 1-2-4. The 100, 200, and 400-meter dash, that is. The senior advanced to the Iowa Girls Class 4A State Track and Field meet in all three events during the Trojans' qualifying meet in Dubuque Thursday. Norman won the 200-meter dash with a blazing time of 25.47 seconds and took second in each of the 100 and 400 races. When the Trojans first hit the track this spring, Norman's season appeared to be in jeopardy. Quote, "The first day of practice, I got hurt," Norman said. "So I did not know how the rest of my season was going to look. But I persevered, and I am doing what I want to do right now," unquote. "I got really nervous. Senior year, you want to do good, run as much as you can, so I got a little worried. I have been sticking with my rehab, and I have been good," unquote. Norman injured her left hamstring, which forced her to sit out the entirety of the indoor season and the first few meets of the outdoor schedule. But, according to the senior, she hit the ground running when she got the chance to get back on the cinder and clay. Norman managed to set herself up with the second, third, and third fastest seed times in her three events. Norman described a mixture of emotions heading into qualifying on Thursday. Quote, "I was nervous because I know that I have not competed as much as these other girls," Norman said. Quote, "But I was also confident because I trust my training and what my coaches have been having me do. I was ready." Norman's mixture of emotions contrasted with Waterloo East head coach William Mohammed's confidence. Quote, "Nyla Norman is a special athlete," Mohammed said. "We were struggling with what to put her in because we knew whatever race we put her in, whether it be individual, open, or relay, that we had a great shot at qualifying in that event." Quote, "We told her to relax and have fun. It is her senior year. Go out with a bang." The next article was written by Ethan Petrick, titled Cedar Falls Tigers Win Boys and Girls Titles, Dubuque. Cedar Falls meant business during the Dubuque State Track and Field qualifying meet on Thursday. The Tigers left Dalzell Field with first-place finishes in both the girls' and the boys' team competitions and earned 24 automatic state championship qualifications, 10 girls and 14 boys. The feat bodes well for the Tigers' ultimate goal of winning a state championship in Des Moines next week. Key to that goal will be the continued of dominance in high jump from senior Jacob Keeler, who won the 2023 Drake Relays High Jump Championship. With a Drake Relays Championship reputation preceding him, status which Keeler said he does not pay mind to, all eyes focused on Keeler during the meet on Thursday. Cedar Falls head coach Dirk Homewood said he felt Keeler handled the pressure deftly. Quote, "There's always a pressure," Homewood said. "When it comes down to the district championship, the top two jumps automatically qualify for state. This was an excellent field. We had seven guys over 6:02. Jacob handled the pressure really well. His ability to handle the pressure became crucial when Keeler missed his second attempt at 6'4" after passing the previous height. With a miss on the next jump, potentially meaning the end of his season, Keeler stepped up for his third attempt, confident. Quote, "I knew I could get it," Keeler said. "I think it's a mental thing for me. Just happy to clear it," unquote. Keeler soared over the bar at 6'4", and then the senior won the boys' high jump competition, clearing 6'6" on his first attempt. Following the win, Keeler explained his decision to pass on a few of the lower heights Thursday and expressed his excitement for state. Quote, "I usually come in at about 6 foot," Keeler said. "I am super used to going up by 2 inches. I do not really see a point in wasting jumps on heights I know I can clear," unquote. Quote, "Qualifying for state feels really good. It feels really good to know that I automatically qualified for state," unquote. At state, Keeler said his focus is on helping the team achieve its ultimate goal and bring home another state championship. Quote, "Looking at state, definitely want to win for the team," Keeler said. "We are shooting for a team title this year, so that would be big for us," unquote. First time is the charm for Cedar Falls' Finley. Karis Finley did not let any first-time jitters throw her off Thursday. The Cedar Falls freshman managed a state qualification in the girls' 400-meter dash, clocking in time 58.94 and finishing first. Finley narrowly edged out Waterloo East senior Nyla Norman for first place, passing the latter on the final stretch with less than 50 meters remaining in the race. According to Finley, the chance to go up against a 2022 state qualifier helped push her on Thursday. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, May 15th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. We'd like to remind you that you can access a recording of today's reading of the Courier and the other newspapers around the state that we read on our website, iowaradioreading.org, and you can do that at any time. And we'd like to thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.